Hi, I'm David Green, and you're listening to the Digital HR Leaders podcast. The world of work always seems to be in a rush. HR professionals are constantly having to juggle priorities, often feel overwhelmed, and are perennially behind. As a result, there can be a tendency to keep our heads down, focused on the next thing, and the next, and so it goes on. This reactive state, while sometimes unavoidable, can sometimes overshadow the proactive strategic planning that is essential for sustained success and growth. It's a challenging balance to strike. This is where the concept of long-term thinking becomes invaluable, not just as a principle, but as a practice for organizational agility. So today, I'm delighted to be joined by my guest, Dori Clark, a distinguished Columbia Business School professor, entrepreneur, and author. Dori has appeared 3 times on the prestigious Thinkers 50 list and is the author of the fantastic book, The Long Game, How to Be a Long-Term Thinker in a Short-Term World, which we will unpack our conversation. In this discussion, we will dive into the key concepts of Dori's book, discussing how as leaders we can prioritize effectively, set adaptable goals, embrace failure as part of innovation, and cultivate strategic patience to not just react to the present, but actively shape the future. So let's get started. Dori, welcome to the show. You've got a great background from politics to now being a successful entrepreneur and 3 times, I think, actually named one of the top 50 business thinkers in the world by Thinkers 50. Very prestigious list, that one. So to start, could you share a little bit about your journey, about how you got to where you are today?
Yeah, David, thank you so much for having me. So I came to the work that I'm doing now, consulting and speaking and advising in the management arena in a bit of a non-traditional way. I originally thought I would be an academic and it didn't work. I got turned down by all of the places I applied to for doctorates. So I had to come up with a plan B for myself, which actually ended up ultimately starting me on my path. I ultimately wrote a book called Reinventing You, which was about professional reinvention. But I did a lot of it early in my career. I worked as a political journalist. I worked as a spokesperson on a variety of political campaigns in the US. I ran a nonprofit organization. But eventually, I started my own consultancy 18 years ago. And so have been working with companies to help them and their leaders get better at what they do and get their messages out in a crowded and noisy sphere.
And you've probably had a much, much more enjoyable and fun career than you would have had as if you'd been an academic, which just proves that sometimes failing isn't a bad thing.
It's true. And in fact, one of the biggest lessons that I've derived from all of that is that, you know, I was really interested in the idea of teaching and interacting with students, and I've managed to get to do that anyway. It's really reinforced for me the fact that so often in our professional lives, we tend to think, oh, well, there's one way to do this. You know, in my mind, it was, okay, if you want to be a professor, you get a doctorate and then you go out and you get hired. And it's a very standard traditional process. But there are actually exceptions everywhere in every field. You just have to find them. You have to find the side door. And so in my case, less than 3 years after I got turned down from all the doctoral programs, I was actually teaching at the university level. I had found another way in by teaching as a practitioner. I was a journalist at that time, and somebody literally sent an email around the newsroom saying, oh, hey, somebody dropped out. Does anyone want to teach a media class? And I'm like, yes, I will do that. So I think that it's a hopeful message. A lot of times people get turned down or blocked for opportunities that they want, and they say, well, it's never going to happen for me. I have to give up that dream. And the truth is, we often give up far too soon.
So your book, The Long Game, which I'll put up there for the benefit of those on the video, excellent book, Long Game, How to Be a Long-Term Thinker in a Short-Term World, has been going strong for almost 3 years now. For our listeners, could you give us a brief synopsis of the book?
Well, ultimately, the long game, the subtitle is, you know, how to be a long-term thinker in a short-term world. And what we're really trying to get at is understanding and recognizing that, yes, we all have pressures that we face, whether it's needing to meet quarterly earnings or needing to respond to all the emails in your inbox. We have these obligations that press on us. But also, if we want to be successful, ultimately, if we want to have the lives and the careers and the businesses that we want to have, we can't afford to just be reactive all the time. We have to somehow find a way to carve out, even in the midst of all the mishigas coming at us, a path to identifying our long-term goals and pursuing them. And I do believe it's possible. And in the long game, I talk about the ways and the techniques that we can use to begin to carve out space for the strategic thinking that just about everybody says they want to do, but so few of us actually get to or make the time to do.
So in today's organizations, and actually, Dori, for context, most of the people that listen to this podcast work in HR. So let's look at HR. So I think particularly in HR, we tend to get very reactive. We're trying to put out fires and it's easy to get overwhelmed and it's difficult to take the time to reflect and maybe focus on the steps to achieving our long-term goals or the long-term goals of the organization as well. What are some of the strategies that we can employ to help us create that space for strategic thinking?
Yeah, well, I think that one of the ways that you can pivot successfully from the short-term crises that sort of erupt regularly into a little bit more long-term thinking is actually to apply some of the methodology of the agile world. Agile has become so popular in software and in other elements. But one of the premises that I think is really useful is the idea that every time you take a step toward doing something, you should be thinking and asking yourself, okay, how can I systematize that for the future? How can I avoid having to take that same step again? And that's helpful. If a problem has emerged, whether it is some kind of a hiccup in a hiring process, or maybe something has gone wrong and everybody's confused about the new benefits package or whatever, great, solve the problem today, but take a step toward recording it, creating a system, creating a fix upstream so that you don't have the same problem next year when everybody goes through the process again. And I like that. Another question that has been very helpful for me personally is asking yourself, and I'd really try to do this regularly, what is it that I can do today that will make tomorrow better and easier? It's really, I think of it as doing a favor for my future self. And so in a literal sense, it's, okay, maybe you want to work out tomorrow morning. So you set out the workout clothes so that it's the first thing you see. You don't have to think about it. You're ready. You're going to do it. But what are work equivalents of that? Maybe it's taking time now to look at your schedule for next month and say, oh, I have that really big presentation that's happening. I should probably, I know I'm going to need to get this information, this data, these images for it. Why don't I send the emails now to people so that I can put out the call to get those things so that they come in 3 weeks in advance and I don't, freak everybody out by asking them 48 hours in advance. That is a favor both to your future self and to other people's future selves.
Is it also maybe sometimes questioning a little bit about some of the stuff that you're doing, and actually thinking, is this actually adding any value? Not just to me, but is this adding any value if you're in HR? Is this adding any value to the business, to the stakeholders that I'm serving with this? And because that's a good way sometimes of prioritizing a little bit, isn't it?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. One of the points that I make in the long game is that something that doesn't really get talked about explicitly, but I think we do need to raise it and name it, is that on a regular basis, let's call it every year for example, we actually have to get more selective about what we say yes to. It is a reality that as we ascend in our careers and up the corporate ladder, you are going to have more demands on your time, more, you know, potentially it's because you have more direct reports, but certainly at a minimum, it's that more people know you, more people expect things of you, more people know that you know certain things. So, oh, ask David, he knows. And as a result, the incoming is just increased. I mean, you know, when you're just starting out at a job, or just starting out in your career, I mean, nobody knows you. Nobody wants to talk to you. It's not a problem. You can afford to say yes to everything. And you probably should, because opportunities will arise and you don't know. I mean, what the heck? You're not doing anything better. But as you become more senior and more successful, you have a lot of legitimately valuable things that you could be doing. Ultimately, the reason why people have such problems with it, it may bring up emotional issues for you. You might feel a little bit jerky saying no to people. You might feel like a bad person for not being helpful. But if we want to be successful at doing the things that matter for us in our career, rather than just being somebody else's errand boy, we have to become more and more systematically discerning about what we're doing and how we're spending our time.
CultureAmp revolutionizes how over 25 million employees across 6,500 companies create a better world of work. As the global platform leader for employee experience, CultureAmp empowers companies of all sizes and industries to transform employee engagement, develop high-performing teams, and retain talent via cutting-edge research using powerful technology and the largest employee data set in the world. The most innovative companies across the globe depend on CultureAmp every day. CultureAmp is backed by over 12 years of innovation, leading venture capital funds, and offices in the US, UK, and Australia. CultureAmp was recognized as one of the world's top private cloud companies by Forbes, and one of the most innovative workplace companies by Fast Company. Learn more about how CultureAmp can help you create a better world of work at cultureamp.com. That's cultureamp.com.
What are some of the strategies that HR leaders, frankly, anyone can use to prioritize effectively and, you know, ensure their teams are focusing on the most impactful projects and maybe give permission for people to say no? What are some of the things that we can do?
Yeah, I'm glad you raised that, David, because this is definitely a, you know, a devil is in the details kind of thing. It might sound nice to say, oh, you know, say no more often. But in practical terms, people really struggle with it because they want to appear responsive. They want to appear like they're doing the things necessary that their higher ups are expecting of them. And so that's why in the long game, I actually lay out very specific scripts and strategies that people can use, because at a fundamental level, you are never going to get to the strategic stuff. Never. If your schedule is overstuffed with minutiae, there's just not space for it. It's not that it takes a huge amount of time to do strategy, but it takes some time. And if you have zero time, you're in a time deficit, it's not ever going to happen. So the first step is how do you clear out the dross and the dreck and make a little space for yourself? So there's a variety of things that you can do. I mean, one, to the point of systematization, is if people keep asking you the same questions, it's actually a really good idea to write it up, to, you know, literally have a document or to put something on an internal website or whatever it is, so that instead of having to respond personally and privately, you can say, oh, great, here's the link, here's everything you need to know. So you do it once and you answer the question for all time. And also not just for you, but probably a lot of your colleagues. It can be helpful because then they won't be bothered with it as well. Another possibility is just sort of, I'll call it deferring and deflecting a little bit. So maybe somebody is coming to you with a request, oh, hey, I'd like your advice about this. And, you know, it's somebody that you'd like to help, but it's certainly not an emergency. So you don't want to be a jerk. You don't want to say no, but it's really not a priority for you. So in that case, I actually really am fully in support of making people jump through some hoops, because that is essentially a way of ensuring that they prove themselves and they prove their seriousness. There are so many people in the world that, you know, they're happy to fire off an email with a, you know, why the heck not? Let's see what happens. But then they don't have the follow through, they don't have the resolve, and they come off of it very quickly. You want to be investing your time in the people who actually are committed and who are just organized at a really basic level enough to follow up. So if you say to somebody, you know, David, I would love to talk to you about that. We are having a really busy patch right now for the next 3 weeks, but I would be happy to talk with you about it next month. If you can email me in 3 weeks, let's set up a time. And okay, great. Put the onus on them. Well, guess what? If David is organized enough to email me in 3 weeks, he has actually shown me something really important. He's shown me he's the kind of guy that can get things done and is deserving of that half hour or hour that he wants to spend with me. So a little bit of delay tactics can be useful. And then finally, if something is coming from higher up, then I think oftentimes, you know, we hesitate to do this, but it's useful to make them adjudicate it a little bit. You can say, you know, if David is my boss, say, you know, David, that's great. I would love to help with this. Help me understand. I was under the impression that, you know, topic A was the priority, and so I am going all in on that. That is how I've been intending to spend my entire week, is just pushing to get that done by Friday. So I could keep with that plan and get to this next week, or if it turns out that this thing you're asking me right now is more important, I'm happy to move it to the front of the line. Please let me know what you think. And in that case, you are being perfectly responsive. You're being perfectly helpful, but you don't have to make some crazy calculation. You're just being overt with it, and they will make the call.
How can you ensure your objectives are not only aligned with business strategy, which obviously is important, but also adaptable to future changes as well? Because everything seems to be changing so fast as well.
Yeah, it's certainly true. One of the themes that I really like to focus on is the idea of provisional hypotheses. Because ultimately, if we're being intellectually honest, that's what we've got, right? No one knows the future. Oftentimes, the future will proceed roughly the way that we expect. But it's also true, and we have all seen with things like the pandemic, there can be extremely sharp divergences that happen out of the blue that nobody predicts, that are massively disruptive. We just don't know. And so as a result, you know, the best that we can do is to have a hypothesis. You do need to have one, because you need to be marching towards something, you know, because again, most of the time things will probably proceed the way that you're anticipating. So under, the most of the time circumstance, if you are working toward a clear goal, okay, great. You will march along and get there nicely. But ultimately, when things are disruptive, we just have to hold it lightly. In Silicon Valley, there's a saying that gets thrown around, which is strong opinions lightly held. And I think there's a lot of merit to that. I mean, yes, have your hypothesis, march toward it. But if the facts change, or if the circumstances on the ground change, it's doing no one any favors to be wedded to it. Be ready to shift and pivot when the circumstances warrant.
Often we fear failure, you know, which it can set us back from achieving our goals. You gave a great example at the start, you know, where you wanted to go down one path, that those doors weren't open to you. So you went down another path and eventually got to that, as well as what else you were doing. In HR, this can be quite the paradox, as we try to infuse a culture of innovation and creativity into the organization, but we often resist applying it to our own function due to fear of failure. What's your take on this topic, and how can our listeners overcome this mindset and but also ensure that it's instilled into the company culture as well?
Well, I think you raise a really important point here, and a theme that I talk about in The Long Game is the fact that as long as we are naming when something is an experiment, to a certain extent, that actually helps inoculate you against failure, because you know, if we're proceeding along, you know, oh yes, this is the way, I know the way, this'll work, and then it doesn't, well, of course it's embarrassing, right? You lose face, and everybody says, wait, I thought she knew what she was talking about here. But if we're really clear about what is established protocol and, you know, a fact that, you know, yes, we know this is replicable versus we're trying something new, we're experimenting, it might not work, but we will gather interesting data that will be helpful in the future. No one afterwards is going to be, you know, lambasting you for that unless, you know, unless you've overshot and, you know, somehow put millions of dollars at risk or whatever, you know, assuming it is a normal sized experiment, you can say, look, you know, we said from the beginning, this was an experiment. We were gonna try it for a month to be fully remote and see how it worked. Or we were gonna try it for a month with, you know, the new organizational design, or, you know, whatever it is. You can have short-term pilots, you can have tests, you can have experiments, and you see. And if it looks like it's working, you do more. And if it looks like it's not, that's fine. You can pivot without having failed. Failure is actually irrelevant when it comes to something that you have declared an experiment, because the success is in the gathering of data, not the yes or no.
Yeah, and as you said, it's experiment, and be clear that we're experimenting. We're going to try this. We're going to try it for X period of time. And this is how we're going to measure whether it's successful or not. And then when we get to the end of that, we'll have a discussion. And as you said, if we think we've been successful, then we'll maybe expand it. Or we'll take what we've learned and maybe slightly pivot a bit, you know, and as you said, it's not a failure per se, but how do you decide when it's time to pivot or persevere? How can we differentiate between the need for patience versus the need for adjusting our strategy?
Yeah, you've raised something really important, because as I was exploring the topic of strategic thinking and, you know, the patience that sort of necessity has to accompany it sometimes, because inevitably some goals just do take a long time, no matter how much we would like them to be quick, they're just not. What I came to understand is that so often the fear that many people have, I heard it again and again, is they were afraid essentially to kind of look like a sucker. They were afraid, you know, but what if I stay too long doing a thing that's not working? And, you know, that's the thing. They don't want to look stupid. But the ironic thing is that in the pursuit of not looking stupid, like the last person attempting a thing, they often bail too quickly. And it almost systematically precludes them from having the success that they want and may well have achieved, because they just did not give it enough time to come to fruition. So it's a really important question. You know, how do you know the difference? And I would say that one of the most important things is actually an upstream answer. Sometimes we try to answer it when we're in the middle of it, and in the middle of it is a terrible time, because you are subject to all of these emotions about, you know, oh no, it's miserable, it's not happening, I better quit. Well, upstream, before you start, that is a time that you need to be starting to establish metrics that are, you know, laid out, written down in advance. And how do you get metrics? Well, the good news about most things in corporate life is that, while there are rare exceptions, in almost all cases, the thing that you want to do, whether it is coming up with a new compensation system at your company, whether it is switching over to a different CRM, whether it is coming up with a new recruitment strategy, you know, whatever it is, it's been done by someone else in the past. You know, maybe it's another competitor in your industry. Maybe you have to draw a little further afield. Maybe it's a different industry, but somebody has done this before. And we often fail to do even basic due diligence, trying to understand, like, well, what did it look like for them? How long did it take them? What were some of the milestones there? What were some of the hangups? If we do even a modicum of research, you know, and try to get two or three different case studies, you can begin to triangulate, right? I mean, it's not to say that your process is going to be the same as everybody else's process, but if you, you know, look at examples, and it took these guys 24 months, it took these guys 36 months, it took these guys 19 months, it's probably not going to get done for you in 8 weeks. And so, a big problem is that because we haven't done the due diligence, we think that we have waited so long and we've been so patient. It's just so obvious it's not working. And yet we haven't even gotten halfway to where it should be on average because we just didn't check. So I think that starting upstream and asking the right questions and understanding the milestones can help avoid a world of hurt once we get into it, whatever the it is.
We hope you're enjoying this episode of the Digital HR Leaders podcast. If you are looking to continue your learning journey, head over to myhrfuture.com and take a look at the My HR Future Academy. It is a learning experience platform supporting HR professionals to become more data-driven, more business-focused, and more experience-led. By taking our short assessment, you will see how you stack up against the HR skills of the future. Then, our recommended learning journeys guide you every step of the way, helping you to close your skills gap, deepen your knowledge, and press play on your career. Dori, if you were to leave our audience, we've got one question after this, actually, which is the question of the series, but if you were to leave our audience with one key takeaway from the long game that could transform their approach to HR and to leadership, what would it be?
Yeah, thank you, David. Well, I think that one of the most important things, and this was very salient for me writing it during the pandemic, was a concept that I talk about in the long game, which is heads up and heads down mode. And, I think so often people who are diligent and responsible operators are almost perennially stuck in heads down mode, where they are executing, they are doing the things, they are just grinding at work. And of course, there's a place for that. That is very important. That is, during the pandemic, that was kind of how we all needed to be. But I think a lot of us have stayed in that mode. And that's great. But it's also equally important for all of us, both in terms of our sort of, career satisfaction, but also the strategic imperatives of our business, to recognize that that is not the only way to be. If we want to be successful, just like there's circadian rhythms in our bodies, there need to be rhythms in our professional life. And periodically, we need to go into heads up mode, where we are looking around and strategically evaluating the landscape. Have things changed? What has changed? What are the implications of that? Are the things that I have been, jamming on, are those still the right things, or do I need to change my approach? And toggling periodically between those things is one of the most valuable things that we can do. And just reminding ourselves, because we tend to get in habits, we tend to have sort of personalities that tilt more in one direction than another, but a successful professional has to be both and do both.
No, I think that's really good advice. And if I think about in HR, it's very easy to be heads down, focusing on the work that you're doing. But as you said, you need to put your head up sometimes, not just within the organization as well. You need to look at what the external factors are maybe impacting on the company as well. And just think, as you said, is it time to pivot, or is it time to persevere even more? Because this is actually even more important than we thought it was. So that's a great piece of advice, Dori. And so what are the top three ways you believe where HR could play a pivotal role in creating a thriving organizational culture? And please draw from the long game if you want to draw from the long game or the other work that you're doing.
Absolutely. So in terms of HR's ability to contribute to a thriving corporate culture, I mean, probably one of the most salient pieces, of course, is the talent pipeline. And so when it comes to playing the long game, I think, a literal day-to-day challenge of HR is that, everybody, is sort of grabbing at your ankles, asking you these really basic questions about, tell me about the healthcare plan. Tell me about the retirement package. And, it's nice, you got to do it. But ultimately, where HR is really going to be able to establish itself the way it should as a trusted partner and collaborator for everybody in the business, it's about thinking through how HR can use its talents to further the overall business interests. And that means retaining people, and it means recruiting the right people. And so the more any HR professional is able to mitigate and deal with the sort of niggling operational questions, but reserve their time and their brain space for important business strategic objectives and coming up with helpful, concrete, tangible plans that you can, you know, bring to business partners and say, hey, you know, here's what we've come up with. Is this helpful to you? Let's talk. Let's collaborate. How can HR be, you know, working hand in glove with you to help get you the talent you need to fill these essential roles for the future? I think, you know, that's a crucial element right there. I think another way that HR can be critical in building a powerful corporate culture is in creating the atmosphere of continual learning and professional development. Really sort of instituting that as the kind of, you know, growth mindset of the business. I give a lot of talks to companies where one of the things that they're dealing with is this, you know, sort of emerging reality amongst employees that, of course, has been brewing for 20, 30 years, which is that we don't so much have corporate ladders anymore. It's not so much, you know, oh, okay, you get on here and then, you know, 30 years later, you get off there. It's much more choose your own adventure. It's much more individually directed. You don't just get promoted for standing around for 2 years and then you move on somewhere else. And so having HR really take a lead in helping everyone understand that this is your own journey, that you need to be autonomous and, you know, we will help you, you need to be responsible for sort of making important choices here. And here's a buffet of development options, but you need to pick some things and you need to be choosing that for yourself, I think is crucially important in terms of and empowering employees to have the career that they want, because so many still, unfortunately, are kind of in the mindset of passive, like, oh, well, things will be done to me. I will be trained. This will happen to me, rather than you making it happen. And, you know, finally, I would say that when it comes to HR and its overall role in shaping culture, I recently wrote a piece with my colleague Alexis Redding for Harvard Business Review, where we're talking about, you know, fundamental ways to build a culture of belonging at work. And, you know, it's good for so many reasons. I mean, retention, of course, but also just being the kind of company that any company wants to be, getting the most out of its employees because they are motivated to show up and work and do well. And, you know, it's none of it is crazy, none of it's rocket science, but it's feeling seen, heard, and valued at a fundamental level. And so that means things like, you know, which so many great HR people are doing, helping managers be thoughtful with their employees. You know, again, we were just saying it's both and, right? Employees are responsible for their own journey. And also, it is a mitzvah when bosses take the time to help them discover new opportunities that they aren't aware of and think through strategically, okay, given your interests, given your talents, where can we go and how can we develop things? And just creating a culture where people do get noticed, you know, where if you have a hobby, other people take an interest in that, where, you know, people seem to value the things that you say and take them seriously. And when we put a stake in the ground in creating that kind of culture, it helps everyone.
No, very good. And I was thinking when I was listening to the first one that you mentioned, Dori, you know, how technology can be a potential game changer here for HR, you know, to deliver more value, because all these more mundane requests that we get, as you said, about the retirement policy, about the health policy, if we can actually enable some of those questions to be answered via AI, Gen AI technology, then it allows us as HR professionals to focus much more on the stuff where we can really make a difference and really add value both to individuals and the organization. Some really good, thoughts there on how we can create that thriving culture. I think within HR can help create that thriving culture within the organization. Can you let listeners know how they can connect with you on social media, find out more about your work? I think you have your own website, for example, and also find out more about The Long Game and the other books that you've written.
Yeah, for folks who are interested in this discussion and in particular, becoming an even deeper long-term thinker, I do have a free resource, which is the Long Game Strategic Thinking Self-Assessment. Folks can get it for free at doryclark.com/thelonggame. And on my website, as you mentioned, I have more than 800 free articles available that I've written for places like Harvard Business Review and Forbes and Entrepreneur. And folks can get them on the articles page of my website for free, just doryclark.com.
Dory, thanks so much for being a guest on the Digital HR Leaders podcast. I certainly recommend The Long Game to anyone listening. Thank you very much for being a guest on the Digital HR Leaders podcast.
David, thank you so much.
That wraps up another insightful episode of the Digital HR Leaders podcast. A huge thank you to our guest, Dory Clark, for joining us today. If you did enjoy this episode, be sure to subscribe to the show and leave a 5-star rating on your favorite podcasting platform so that we can keep producing the show. For more from us at Insight 222, be sure to subscribe to the podcast, visit our PEP website at insight222.com, and you can sign up for our weekly newsletter by going to myhrfuture.com. That's all for now. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll be back next week with another episode of the Digital HR Leaders podcast. Until then, take care and stay well.